Harvey Firestone helped invent the American highway road system. So, it's only fitting that Firestone Complete Auto Care would have our epic sales event in the heart of the road trip season. From June 6th to 9th, you can stop by your local Firestone for up to $100 off select services, so you can get going on your next adventure. Limited time offer, conditions apply. Go to FirestoneComplete.com for details.
I won't let my moderate to severe plaque psoriasis symptoms define me.
Emerge as you. In two clinical studies, Tremfya guselkumab, taken by injection, provided 90% clearer skin at 16 weeks in 7 out of 10 adults with moderate to severe plaque psoriasis. In a study, nearly 7 out of 10 patients with 90% clearer skin at 16 weeks were still clearer at 5 years. At 1 year and thereafter, patients and healthcare providers knew that Tremfya was being used. This may have increased results. Results may vary.
Serious allergic reactions may occur. Tremfya may increase your risk of infections and lower your ability to fight them. Before treatment, your doctor should check you for infections and tuberculosis. Tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms of infection, including fever, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough. Tell your doctor if you had a vaccine or plan to.
Emerge as you. Learn more about Tremfya, including important safety information, at Tremfya.com or call 1-877-578-3527. See our ad in Food & Wine magazine. For patients prescribed Tremfya, cost support may be available.
Someone who's working on big ideas like augmented reality and computer vision. Let's talk to an expert. David Rose, who's got a new book out on the topic, joins us to understand the space and his thoughts on implementations. This is a bonus episode of The Business of Tech. David, thank you for joining me today.
Oh, it's great to be here. I'm excited to talk about my new book and kind of all of the uses of this next wave of computing.
So I always like to sort of start out because I can do a bio, but I'd actually really like to hear a little bit about your journey. Like, where, how did you start and end up what you're doing now?
Yeah, I'm one of these kind of weird hybrid people where I majored in physics and fine art when I was an undergrad. I came out to MIT and studied at the Media Lab, which kind of celebrates people who are into kind of computing and music, or computing and Legos, or computing and something else. I got a chance to work on Guitar Hero and Rock Band in the early days, and also Lego Mindstorms, which was a robotics invention kit, which some of us probably played with when we were kids.
Yep.
and I've been a five-time entrepreneur across museum exhibit design, healthcare, and computer vision and artificial intelligence. And now I'm kind of in this place where I'm just have gone completely down the rabbit hole in terms of just asking, how could people's vision or their eyesight change with this next platform for computing?
That's exactly the area that I think is worth talking about, because there's obviously a lot of buzz out there right there when we threw out the phrase metaverse, and every trends predictor for IT is talking about how the metaverse is the next big thing. You've got a particular take, in particular in your new book, focused on this. Give us your premise on what you think the value is here in, quote unquote, the metaverse.
Sure. Well, actually, I just got some Meta Quest Pro headset last night that I tried for the first time. And that has something, it looks like a VR headset. So it looks like it blocks your view of the world and instead gives you this kind of immersive 3D thing. But that headset, interestingly, has something called pass-through video. So you see virtual layers as well as the real world. And that is what I'm excited about in terms of this next phase. So I call it the real world metaverse. That is, how do you take the world that we live in, spatialize all this information that is now in Wikipedia, and kind of land it and anchor it into the real world? So I am much less interested in kind of sealing people's views off from the real world, and instead interested in real people in real jobs and real conversations between people, and then putting an additional layer of information in that situation.
I think your approach to this and mine are not far off. So I want to actually throw out a bit of a premise and give your get your take on it. So my thinking is, and by the way, I'm a gamer too. So like I enjoy the fictionalized version of it, saying like we have versions of the metaverse that I think will be fun and interesting from an immersion gameplay perspective. But I'm with you in that I think that the actual implementation is adding information where you are in a real-time environment, but we're adding it through a technology. And I tend to think it will happen in kind of more subtle ways. I will laugh and go like, I think things that put headsets on that causes most a significant portion of people to be nauseous is probably not the direction it's going. It's probably going to be more eyeglasses, spoken word in the ear, or at some point probably more holographic or something that where data is interpreted. Am I right? Am I wrong? What's your take on that premise?
Well, I do think it's going to be very context specific. And I like the AR glasses that I want show mostly nothing. You know, they most of the time aren't polluting my vision with like all kinds of RoboCop, Iron Man kind of annotations of the real world. But instead, they're just like allowing me to see things like maybe with better focus or with better zoom than I can today. But I do think there are situations, many, many situations where we do want a little bit of assistance or marking or guidance. And I mean, chiefly one of those is navigation, right? Like I want to not be lost in the world. And certainly when I drive almost any place, even if I know where I'm going these days, I will use Waze or Google Maps. Why? Because like there may be information about, a hazard in the middle of the road or a traffic jam or a way to avoid it. So it's not only about navigation, it's also about kind of more and better information. But there are so many other places like navigating around MIT or through a big hospital system like MGH or in Boston, where you have no idea like how long it's going to take and if you're on the right path. And so I think certainly navigation is something we still all do a lot of the day. And I think that will be one of the kind of first use cases for having these annotations in our glasses. And then kind of annotations that are navigation, but more about kind of helping you make the right decision. So one of the projects I just worked on with Northwestern was somebody who is head of their food allergy. She's a pediatrician and she just wrote a book all about food allergies. People who shop for families that have special like gluten intolerances or dairy restrictions, going to the grocery store is just a shit show. like making a decision about like what's the type of granola I should get that I can afford that fits the allergy profile. So if you actually had like a diminished reality in that case, you want more information, but it would also just be nice to kind of not see all the stuff that has gluten in it. And instead, so you can make a better choice in that situation. I think like that type of technology will be like just hugely helpful for people.
So that's where it's giving, again, it's context, right? So it's knowing the problem you're trying to solve. And it's saying, I'm looking at the world and I'm going to either like highlight or, de-emphasize in some cases or emphasize in others, things that you want to pay attention to or make sure you don't miss. I'm with you. Like I use navigation for everything because I always quip, it knows more than I do about circumstances, particularly I live in the DC metro, it knows about traffic, right? So it knows all the traffic information that I don't know. Getting that information in real time is the key bit. Now, where are the kind of some of those good business examples that you're thinking about the way this will be applied?
Well, one of the projects I'm working on is a kind of AI-driven landscaping company. So what we do is we gather data about the existing conditions of people's landscapes. So there are 53 million homes in America. And you can get aerial views and street view, thank you, Google, for most of those properties. And so we put that existing condition of where's the house, what does the house look like, what are the dimensions of the property, what's the slope of the property into a game engine. It's the same thing that first-person shooters use, and so Unreal Engine is the one we're using, and so we can kind of make a 3D view of the world of these, you know, residential properties. And then with algorithms, we drop in things that people might like. So it's a 3D configurator, but for the outside of your house. It's already being done by people, you know, who hold up their phone and use the IKEA app or the Wayfair app and kind of see like, well, what is the couch going to look like over here? But what's nice about the outside is we don't have to ask them to take any pictures. The pictures already exist. We can drop those things in, and then we can use kind of the power of visualization to charm people, persuade people into having a landscape that has more shade, that captures more carbon, that uses less water, and that also increases the value of their house, which convinces them to, you know, pony up a few thousand dollars and make that change.
This is a great example, and I want to actually explore it a little bit because, you know, you're at the front end of this. So you're somebody who's thinking about how can this product be created and how can it exist in the world. And if I think a lot about my audience, they're at the other extreme of that. They're the people that ultimately would put that technology in place for companies that might leverage it. So I want to actually use this as an opportunity to help link those two worlds. When you're thinking about this and you start, what's your process? Like, is it start with just purely the product, or is it how it's going to work in the real world all the way out to that? Help me understand how that process works.
Well, I mean, I think about the friction that exists in various processes. If you're, let's say, a landscape installer, like you have to get a call from a customer. You have to run a truck to the property. You've got to talk to them. You've got to look at the existing condition. You've got to kind of understand what their needs are, whether they have dogs or kids or what their budget is. Then you have to go away and you have to come up with a design, and then you have to go back and convince them to spend the money, and then you have to schedule the install. Like, how could you take some of the friction out of that process? And so, like, maybe as the person who's the landscape installer, before the truck pulls up, you can kind of have a couple of designs that you can show the homeowner, and they can be priced out, and you can, you know, have a bid that's kind of automated. And that to me seems like goodness, because you probably don't have, maybe you could even do it without running a truck, right? Like, maybe somebody could just get an email that says, would you like to see your new home, and talk about the benefits, and then connect them with a local installer and say, you know, here you go. So I get excited about the potential for visualization to influence people, to change minds. I worked at Warby Parker, which is a company that makes glasses. And right before COVID, we developed a virtual try-on tool. So this is the same tech as the camera that unlocks your phone. So it casts a grid on your face. It figures out your pupillary distance, your nose bridge, your the dimensions of your face, and then can recommend glasses that are going to look great on you. And you can have enough confidence now to make that decision. And so I think that kind of generalizes for lots of types of businesses, whether you're like installing fencing, or you're planning a septic, or you're anything that you're painting a house. Like, the ability to kind of show somebody what it's going to look like and overcome that kind of imagination gap that most of us have, you know, it's hard to imagine what something's going to look like. If that's impressive, that can really save people a lot of time.
It's really interesting to hear you describe the use case, right? Because you'll talk about the tech, and you definitely are diving into all of the thinking around how the business owner or the business would solve that. And you've got a model, it sounds like, and I want to understand a little bit more about it. It sounds like you have a model of the business owner or the implementer. So like in your landscaping example, right? You literally have envisioned that here's the contractor, he's coming on site. I understand his problem. I understand it. How are you thinking about their technology in that use case? Are you making assumptions? Are you documenting what you think they need? Are you modeling that out? Is it a persona? Give me a little insight into how you think about that role in the process.
Yeah, well, I make a couple of jumps when I think about this kind of new real world metaverse. I assume that making a digital twin of nearly anything is going to be easy and fast. And so I, whether it's the inside of your house and what the new tile might look like in your bathroom to, you know, what, whether it's a, you know, what a new bike lane might look like on your street outside. I kind of assume that we can use computer vision to understand the existing conditions in the world and make a 3D model of that. And then I ask myself, well, where would visualization make a meaningful difference in terms of how somebody is able to understand something or understand the dimensions of something? I take a lot of inspiration from, you know, there's a company called Sunday that looks at satellite images of people's lawns and said, this is exactly how much lawn juice, you know, you're going to need for this size lawn. That's really helpful. You know, being able to look at aerial views and say, this is where the risk is in cities. This is where people have crashed cars, or being able to take big data of where people have crashed boats and be able to kind of figure out how you could use AR navigation to kind of guide them and warn them in those situations. So that's kind of step one, is assume the digital twin and then figure out how to kind of use the fact that you know the dimensions, you can show it to someone in a very vivid way, and ask, well, you know, might that have relevance for what I do every day for my job? And then I think about the other kind of big benefit of what my book is called Supersight. And I think the next version of computing won't be like holding up a black glass slab of a, you know, phone or having the data on your wrist, but it'll be like, the compute will be on your face, right? It will be like you're wearing glasses, you can see something new in the glasses, and other people can see what you're seeing. And, you know, think about for a business all the times that it would be really useful to say, well, show me exactly like what you're stuck on or where you're having, you know, it would really change how you interact with your team and your workforce if you could kind of teleport into somebody else's view of the world. And, you know, so that they don't make a mistake, so they make the right decision in that, you know, 5% or 3% of the day where they really need some guide.
It's interesting to hear you talk about that way, because it does involve a device. How much do you think there's a link between a requirement for a device versus the premise of ambient computing, right, where it just sort of exists all around us?
Yeah. That's a good question. I had a company called Ambient Devices. It was all about kind of taking the information that is on the phone and trying to spread it into everyday objects, you know, into lighting or jewelry, or we made a internet connected medication packaging, you know, a pill cap essentially that would know if you've taken your immunosuppressant or, you know, your diabetes med. And if you hadn't, it could nudge you through sending you a text message or calling your home phone or doing something like that. So I do think that, you know, this world of IoT is making sensing and sensors and connectivity a lot more affordable to kind of sprinkle them around the world. But I think that the, you know, being able to just hold up your phone and take a picture of something, or not even take a picture, but just hold up your phone and see something that's changed about the world through the phone, like Pokemon Go has done with video games, that can change a lot of jobs. I mean, I think that can kind of help a lot of people to have a computer that's interpreting what's in front of them, that's naming it, that's explaining it, that's reordering it, that's allowing somebody else to see it. That's really powerful.
Yeah, but it also seems like, but to get there, obviously, there's a bunch of things that we've got to achieve. You've even said, like, you've got to be able to model a digital twin. Well, that also requires a whole set of systems behind that. Have you got a bit of a list of the things that, like, well, these are the milestones we kind of have to hit to get to that reality?
So in the book, I talk about kind of 9 different capabilities that we'll need or benefits that we'll get from this world of kind of ambient computing. You know, the first one is just having everything around you recognizable or recognized by, you know, by you. So if you're repairing something or, you know, looking at a tree or a bird or whatever it is, like having it identified is really useful, especially if it's a part that you need to reorder, for example. Another one is this is having these systems kind of look at you and understand your psychological state. Like, are you stressed? Are you engaged? Are you interested? Like, have, you know, a lot of these learning and training systems will get so much better because they'll know whether you're tuned in right now or whether you're kind of confused and they need to offer a different approach. You know, the third chapter is really about, I call it styled, because it's really about these neural networks, these new ways of using the most powerful kind of computer vision is starting to have an opinion about how you look or how something looks, and really make these, you would think, totally subjective judgments about, you know, Dave, I don't know if the t-shirt is working for you today. You know, I mean, like, I don't, maybe you should, you know, or you'd probably look better with a mustache. I don't know.
Right.
But being able to really have like that kind of opinion about people and about the world around us. So I do think there's this, these coming set of capabilities. I mean, frankly, the one that's so exciting these days is called diffusion nets or generative adversarial nets, which are these types of neural networks that can take what you describe and manifest a picture or an animation or a video based on what you say. I don't know. Like, do you think that how many businesses would benefit from being able, from having you look at something, describe a change to that thing, and have that imagined, you know, have that rendered for you as you describe the change?
Well, you can. Yeah, you can easily see it in all these areas with design and interaction, where you can, if you take an abstract thing, and I can talk about what it might look like, and then we can see it and talk about it and visualize it. That makes perfect sense.
Or even like make that safer, you know, like take my mom's house and like, what do I need to do in order to make that safer, or to make, you know, decrease the fall risk, or, you know, like all of these things, to be able to have a computer kind of know your mind and know your wishes and then propose something just like a good designer might do.
So you brought up safety, because that actually kind of brings into my next question. And it's interesting to think about this from a storyteller's perspective. The movie Minority Report has been incredibly useful from a storytelling perspective, mm-hmm. because it did a really great job of conveying a lot of these ideas very early. And it implanted a lot of these ideas into the consciousness. And some of the ideas you described were illustrated in a movie like that. But there's also negative connotations to some of that. How much thinking do you give to the way this tech might be used for less optimal or less optimistic outcomes?
Yeah, I deal with this a lot in the book. I have what are called the hazards of supersites. And there are six kind of distinct categories that I really worry about. The first one is about, once we can all change the view that we have of the world, if we can superimpose kind of digital layers onto the real world, obviously that's going to mean different people will choose different layers. You know, you might say like, I'm really interested in the history of the city and architecture and something. And I'll just say like, I'm just really sick of people, just like erase all the people. I just want to see the dogs, you know, or something. Right. But what it means is that we'll have this filter bubble problem that's even bigger than Facebook now. And we'll all be, you know, we won't see the same world all around us. So I think I have some design ideas of how to change of a way out of that. But I think that first one is really is kind of social insulation problem. We'll all be wearing headphones listening to our own soundtrack, except now there'll be glasses that are our own, you know, visual track as well.
Is there something that technologists, you know, those designing it or those implementing it, should be thinking about in that context to prepare or ready so that we can actually do our part to kind of offset that?
Yeah, I think there are a lot of design things to be done with that kind of social insulation. I mean, just as this technology has a great potential to kind of divide and separate us, it's also just like an amazing empathy machine. You know, I can see the world through your eyes and see it, maybe even, you know, interpreted the way that you're interpreting it. And I think that would be hugely beneficial for helping to teach other people or to understand other people or to teleport yourself into other people's kind of points of view. So I think I mean, I'm optimistic on for some aspect of that.
Well, I think that optimism is a great place to end this. And your book will give people a lot of insights. What are the best ways to get access to that?
Sure. Well, I maintain a website, supersight.world, not .com, but .world. So it's super, S-I-G-H-T, like the vision site. So supersight.world. And I have links to a free chapter for the book and a bunch of examples of projects that I'm working on. There's one about boating that's all about kind of X-ray vision that allows you to see through the water to where there are fish or where the rocks are. People really love that. I'm on Twitter at David Rose.
Awesome. Well, thanks for joining me today.
Thank you, David.
Remember, if you like this kind of content, you can support it directly. Visit patreon.com/MSP Radio for our Give What You Want program. Every little bit helps, and we are supported directly by listeners like you. The Business of Tech is written and produced by me, Dave Sobel, under ethics guidelines posted at businessof.tech. Like the content? Support the show at patreon.com/MSP Radio. Or buy our Why Do We Care merch at businessof.tech. If you want to reach our listeners, visit mspradio.com/engage.
Part of the MSP Radio Network.
'Tis the season for summer road trip adventures. And Firestone Complete Auto Care's epic savings event with up to $100 off select services from June 6th to the 9th. Limited time offer. Conditions apply. Go to firestonecomplete.com for details.
I won't let my moderate to severe plaque psoriasis symptoms define me.
Emerge as you. In 2 clinical studies, Tremfya guselkumab, taken by injection, provided 90% clear skin at 16 weeks in 7 out of 10 adults with moderate to severe plaque psoriasis. In a study, nearly 7 out of 10 patients with 90% clear skin at 16 weeks were still clearer at 5 years. At 1 year and thereafter, patients and healthcare providers knew that Tremfya was being used. This may have increased results. Results may vary.
Serious allergic reactions may occur. Tremfya may increase your risk of infections and lower your ability to fight them. Before treatment, your doctor should check you for infections and tuberculosis. Tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms of infection, including fever, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough. Tell your doctor if you had a vaccine or plan to.
Emerge as you. Learn more about Tremfya, including important safety information, at Tremfya.com or call 1-877-578-3527. See our ad in Food & Wine magazine. For patients prescribed Tremfya, cost support may be available.